This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
We're back for hour number two. It's the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. Excited to be back with you this hour. Harry Gagnon to join us in about a half hour's time, co-host of the Against All Odds podcast. Meanwhile, Michael Lombardi is back. I'm Ben Wilson. Patrick Maher back on the show tomorrow here on the Lombardi Line. We'll go to Baltimore to start this hour off, Michael. It's been a tremendously wild 4 weeks for the Ravens, at least to this point. And if you look statistically now, as Baltimore comes into a big AFC North matchup against Cincinnati, Ravens right now, through 4 weeks, have become the first team since the 2011 Minnesota Vikings to blow not one, but two different games in which they led by 17 or more points in the first 4 weeks of the season. How do you explain that? It's ridiculous what's happened.
Was that Brad Childress? That was the Brad Childress. The Brad Childress Minnesota Vikings. Yeah, wow. You don't want to be in that company. Wow.
that's
a tough
company.
One right there. Now, look. I mean, it's pretty clear. You don't score in the second half of these games, and it's going to cost you. I don't care what Harbaugh says. I think the reason he and Marcus Peters were getting after it was because Marcus Peters, the team wanted him to kick the field goal. I don't know how many more games Harbaugh's going to lose by deciding to go for it on fourth down. You know, like the two-point play, I got it in Pittsburgh. The team was exhausted. They had nobody left. But the concern going into this game is, I don't know if you looked this over, but the last time these two teams played, I can accurately say the Bengals scored 82 points in one game with Lamar Jackson. They scored 17. In the other game without Lamar, they scored 21. They've been outscored 82-38 in the last two games by the Cincinnati Bengals. And that defense last year wasn't good, but I'm not sure that defense is better. Isn't better than this year's. This year's defense is bad. I mean, John Harbaugh wouldn't have gone for it, but on the one, if he thought his defense was elite, he really wouldn't have. If he thought his defense was elite and could stop, I mean, you know, I think he went for it because he felt like, okay, I want to play for a tie because I think they're going to score no matter what. I think his defense is bad. We'll see the Bengals offense hasn't been the same as it was last year. But last year, Chase made huge plays against him.
And isn't lost a little bit in the discussion from Sunday, that decision by John Harbaugh to go for it like you talked about? The fact that if you don't have the pass intercepted, part of the rationale for going for it is, well, worst case scenario, you pin Buffalo deep inside their own five. But because of the double whammy, Lamar Jackson throws an interception, it completely negates any of that back-end strategy that you were looking as a fallback option. Buffalo gets the ball up to the own 25, and next thing you know, they're in field goal range and the game is basically over. I don't know that we're necessarily taking into account that part of how that fourth down play went awry and how that was such a big factor, at least to me, Michael, when you looked at how Harbaugh set that play up.
I couldn't agree more, Ben. I mean, like, you have this really athletic quarterback who leads your team in rushing attempts with 11, and you drop him back like he's Dan Marino. And now you're saying, well, the guy was open on the sail cut. Yeah, he was, you know, but maybe I thought he got pressure and he had to start to buy himself a second look. I mean, why not get him on the perimeter? Why not move him around? Because worst case scenario, like you said, you want the ball on the 1-inch line because you got such faith in your defense, right? And they four down wouldn't be in play if they were back there. And that was his whole logic. If they had the ball on the 1 yard line, that was a three play. It was a three drive game. And I don't see that. You know, I don't see that because I think they're going to get a first down. I think it's hard to say you're going to keep them because they're not going to change their offense when they're backed up. They got Josh Allen. You can't tackle the big guy. Right. He's hard to get on the ground. And he's not going to bootleg out of the backfield like Garoppolo did. You know, so it's going to be hard to get him off the ground. I mean, I would think the first play would have been a quarterback sneak to get a couple yards. Second play was going to be a throw. And the third play was going to be a throw. They were going to get a first. I would have said 85% chance they're getting a first down.
I would have guessed right around the same percentage. It's why the aggressiveness was probably the right decision. And for what it's worth, analytics say that it was the right call. 2% a higher win probability.
Analytics is undefeated. They're undefeated. Ben, analytics is undefeated. They're under. They haven't lost a game yet. They're just tremendous in how they work. It's just unbelievable. You know, it's unbelievable. I mean, like the other night, what game was it? I've watched so many games, I lost my mind here. Okay. Oh, our boy Kevin Stefanski. He goes for it. Fourth down in the first half. First quarter. First drive of the game. Has anybody mentioned that those 3 points that he passed away lost the game for him? Did anybody mention that? Of course not. Because it's the right thing to do, Ben. It's the right thing. Analytics said it's the right thing. Now, analytics is undefeated. They haven't lost a game all year. But Stefanski cost his team with that decision. Why not collect the points in the first quarter, second quarter? I mean, Frank Wright has really ruined his team with these decisions he makes.
And that's why, I mean, every decision is independent and unique. I mean, that isn't that the point? Like,
just not according to analytics. Not according to analytics. They don't take that into account.
I know.
You look at that sheet. That sheet says go for it because we're undefeated.
Undefeated. Never lost.
How about the flow of the game? How about the flow of the game? Like, you got to feel that. Like Stefanski's sitting there. I'm going to be back down here again. Let me take my three. I'm going to probably – I mean, I would have never visualized that Mariota would have won that game throwing seven completed passes and that they ran the ball as effective as they did. I would have said, I'm taking the points. Their best player's hurt. Whether he could stay in the game the whole time, I don't know. But I can run the ball on this team eventually. I'm going to run it. And I'm going to – every point's going to matter until we get to the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and that's why –
I don't know what's wrong with that logic.
No doubt. Well, and people might be watching and saying, wait – so you just said you agree with Harbaugh going for it, but you don't agree with Stefanski.
I didn't agree with Harbaugh. I did not agree with him. I'm trying to understand it. I did not agree with Harbaugh because here's why I don't agree with Harbaugh. I kick it, and the weather's bad, okay? And the weather's bad. And I think when you're Sean McDermott and you only need a field goal to get it to overtime, you tend to be a little less aggressive with your play calls when you get into field goal range.
My point
and,
is just,
done a better job. They had done a better job defensively. Like I would have kicked. I would have taken the lead.
My point would.
You know the most
counter.
Important. I thought about this. You know the most important player in football today now is.
It's a kicker.
You know what it is? No. The guy that can do a quarterback sneak.
No. Yeah.
Exactly. The quarterback that can do a quarterback sneak. He's become the most important player in football. Because when you could, Brissett gets first downs because he's so big and first down, third and one, first down.
It's a lost art. I mean, Tom,
I don't have a problem with, I don't have a problem with Stefanski went for it like early in the game. He had like 1 inch to go. So he snuck Brissett. I get it. But some of these teams, Nathaniel Hackett, he's in shotgun on fourth and inches because Russell won't run the sneak. Nobody says that, but Russell won't run the sneak.
All these shotgun sneaks that we're seeing around the league, it's become an epidemic for these quarterbacks on fourth and short. And the greater point, too, is just that, the context matters. It's not just as simple as, the numbers tell you to go for it here, and you just automatically listen to that because time, score, situational things matters. I don't know if your takeaway so far has been, at least from 4 weeks of sample size, that sometimes you maybe think coaches are ignoring the context here. That would at least be my argument from what I've seen so far. You just see a lot of coaches who can then hide behind, that's what the math said, so I'm going to do it all the time.
That's right.
Even if there are certain situations where it makes sense to follow that. Like, I agreed with Harbaugh going for it, given that I felt like the way Buffalo's offense was moving the ball, they probably... Say what you want about the bad weather, and you make a valid point. They have a great chance to get into at the bare minimum field goal range, and as we saw, would have had a great chance to score a touchdown had they not just been able to run out the clock and kick the field goal. But the point is, context matters. Do you think coaches have started to ignore that more and more as the numbers have become more of a dictating type thing for the actual strategy and the actual decision in some of those spots?
No, I think there's no doubt the coaches have really ignored the situation. I think we have way too many coaches calling the game like coordinators, not like head coaches. I mean, look, Buffalo, that was a weather game. It was one of the worst games Buffalo had off. I mean, they ran for 125 yards in that game against the Ravens, right? So it wasn't like that they were throwing it all over the lot. And you got a chance to rush the passer, a tip ball here, a mistake here. We see bets. I mean, anything can happen. Like, anything can happen. And if you say, okay, let's go for it, then why not run the quarterback in a run-pass option or do some form of misdirection to where he has a chance to bail you out with his foot quickness?
And now if you're Baltimore,
or he can make a play.
You go into this divisional matchup. You take on Cincinnati, who will, on the one hand, have extra rest. You talked about the dominance Cincinnati had over Baltimore, putting up over 80 points combined last year in the two games. I still have issues, though, with Cincinnati and the play calling we're seeing so far. You go back to Thursday night and the matchup against Miami. Zach Taylor called 55% runs on first down. And that's fine if running the football is giving you success. Well, here's the thing. Cincinnati got fewer than 3 yards per carry on first downs, negative 0.17 EPA per play on those first down runs, and yet there was zero adjustment made throughout the game. When you have one of the best quarterbacks in the league by any statistical measure in Joe Burrow as your guy throwing the football, help me understand what the philosophy is from Zach Taylor in a position where it keeps putting them behind the sticks and in tough spots to win in Cincinnati.
Because he never goes into the game analyzing what is the game. You see, what you just laid out was we have to gain yard. We have to figure out first down. We have to figure out our first down calls. Kevin O'Connell never figured out it over, even though he won the game over in London, it was a second down call sheet game. He kept getting in, he kept running it on second down so he could get in third and manageable, and New Orleans was too good on third down for him. That's calling the game like a head coach. Okay, what do we have to do in this game? Where is the critical? Where are we messing up? And Zach just keeps calling his plays because Zach's a offensive coach looking to gain yards. That's all he is.
Yeah. 3-point line Sunday, Cincinnati and Baltimore. What a game that the profiles to be.
What are you taking? You're taking Baltimore, aren't you? I could tell by your voice. I know you are.
You know me too well. Probably.
I know you are. I'll wait for your answer on the return.
On the other side. Also, I didn't want to besmirch the good name of Brad Childress. It was actually Leslie Frazier's first year with Minnesota, 2011.
Damn it.
Sorry, Brad.
I would like to blame that on Brad.
More Week 5 discussion next on the Lombardi Line.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
The NHL season is almost here, and our hockey betting experts are ready for all the action. The VSiN Hockey Season Prep Guide is available now with strategies and best bets for the season ahead. Get in-depth analysis from our hockey experts, including Andy McNeil, with predictions for teams and players, win totals, daily betting tips, season-long trends to watch, plus three things every new NHL bettor should know. This guide is a must-have with key insights and data for both avid hockey bettors and those new to the sport. Give yourself an edge this season to get the VSiN Hockey Season Prep Guide by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber today at VSiN.com/subscribe. As we're back on the show, I'm Ben, in for Patrick. Patrick back with us tomorrow. And we were talking earlier, Michael, Thursday Night Football, as is customary to begin the week. We have Indianapolis and Denver this week. We also have another London game, as the New York Giants and the Packers face off at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Yeah.
First time the Pack ever go to London, final NFL team to make the journey across the Atlantic. And it sounds like the Giants will have quarterback Daniel Jones active.
Oh, boy.
That's the belief.
That's a relief. Oh, my God. I thought I was not sleeping. That's why I had trouble sleeping last night.
That's why.
I mean, do you realize net yards per passing play? Who's the worst quarterback in the NFL in that category?
I would have to guess it is either Baker Mayfield or Daniel Jones.
It's Daniel Jones, 4.6. Justin Fields is right there at 4.7. We also have our man Carson Wentz at 4.9. What does this tell us, right? What does this tell us? It tells us the ball wants out of their hands. They want to check it down. Yards per net yards per pass play. I mean, it's significant, right? And so, Daniel, they're giving him a lot of throws to mask the completion percentage, right? So when you look at his completion percentage, you know, you say, well, okay, great. You know, they're doing really well. But when you adjust it out, pass play completion percentage, it's really not. He's at 47.66%. So, you know, and they average 5.2 yards per play. And they average 0.29 yards points per play. I mean, they're not very good when it comes off. They have to keep the game. And if Green Bay gets the lead, then it could be real problematic.
And we're seeing that line settle in market-wide around 8, 8.5. But notice, it's not like this line went at all back to the Giants with the news of Daniel Jones likely to be
in. The Giants are no good. The Giants are not any good. This line tells you everything you need to know. They're not very good. I mean, they've won three games. You know, they beat Carolina. I mean, they've won three games because Brian Daboll's been able to manage the game. And he's played against a quarterback that hasn't been very good. That's the fair, right? I mean, isn't that fair to say that?
No doubt.
I mean, Tannehill didn't play well opening day, even though they're up 13-0, Tannehill plays bad in the second half, right? next week, Baker Mayfield can't complete a pass. And that's a game into the fourth quarter. They win it. Then they lose to Cooper Rush. And then last week, they play Justin Fields. I mean, it's a pretty good schedule when you can get it. You play those quarterbacks.
Pretty simple when you lay it out that way. If only that was the case, all 17 games of the season. And it's you mentioned some of the stats for Daniel Jones that illustrate how little he's been looking to throw the ball down the field. And it's why certain stats matter and others you look at and you can't necessarily weigh them the same. Great example is in ESPN's QBR. I had brought it up on the show. I use it just in certain instances just to compare quarterbacks within the same game. I brought it up with Pritch yesterday just to talk about the Jimmy G Stafford comparison from yesterday. But if you look at the actual leaders from last week, Daniel Jones was number one.
Yeah. Why would you even go to it? Why would you even look at it once you knew that's what I always do on my sheets. I watch every game and I grade every quarterback after every week and then I come up with my quarterback ratings. I don't look at that. I don't look at that. I mean, did they pass the eye test? He had two runs. One was they kept running the same bootleg five times in a row. Where they pin the end, he gets out there and he's got an option to throw it to the sail route or he can run. The first touchdown run, nobody even came out there with him. He just ran down the sideline. You know, and so then they ran RPO with him. He kept it and he ran in. Like, that's not – how is that – that's single wing. That's not a quarterback, you know. So I don't even know why we look at it. I don't even know why we would even attempt to. I don't understand it. It's about grading what you see. It's not about what the numbers say. Because a lot of times, Ben, you know, like I watch – like I thought Brissett played really good last week, to be honest, against Atlanta. I thought he played really – he made some great throws in that game. Throws I didn't think he could make. He made some really good throws. I think he was in the bottom pack of the quarterbacks. But, I mean, he was really good. He didn't win the game, threw an interception late in the game. But I think, to me, they throw too many screens. They don't give him a chance to really be effective. But when you're telling me Daniel Jones is your highest-rated quarterback last week, I'm saying no.
When you throw for 71 yards on just over 60% completion and the touchdown runs, like you mentioned, it was just like, we're doing the same thing over and over. And Chicago did not make any adjustment defensively. I'm not really sure why, but that was the tail of the tape. And our shouldn't matter.
Here's what happened to Chicago, okay? And this is going to happen. This is what's worried Chicago for the rest of the year. The New York Football Giants said to the Chicago Bears, we don't care whatever personnel group you get in on first or second down. We do not care. We're going to stay in our base front. We don't care. We're going to moose it out. We'll put a safety up. We don't care. We're going to force this that you can't. We're not matching you. We're not playing the Gene Rayburn match game here. We're not doing that, right? We're not playing match game here. We're going to make you have to throw it because we're in base. The only answer they could have gone to avoid checkmate was to go to 10. One running back, no tight end, right? Go out to four, which there's no way they're going to keep their edges open and let the game go to Justin Fields. So they had to kind of keep doing it. This is why they lost the game. They were in checkmate in the first quarter because they couldn't change because Martindale wouldn't play Gene Rayburn match game with them.
It's amazing. And Daniel Jones, the beneficiary. Again, sounds like he'll be in this week. Are you concerned at all that Green Bay is 27th against the run this season on an EPA per play basis? And two of those opponents have been teams in Chicago and New England from last week who made it very obvious and apparent they had no desire to do anything but basically run the football right up the middle for the majority of the game.
Yeah, it's a concern. I mean, look, and let's say this. For as bad as Daniel Jones has been, Saquon Barkley's been great. I mean, Saquon Barkley gets him out of a, you know, they try to run a play, and he pivots around the screen pass, one of the completions for Daniel Jones, and it goes, and he pivots around, and he changes complete direction, makes about three guys miss, and he ends the ball at the five-yard line. I mean, he was sensational. He's been their whole team. I mean, you know, to me, again, if I'm the Green Bay Packers, I'm not playing – if I'm Joe Barry, I'm not playing Gene Rayburn match game either. I'm going to line up at base and say, I dare you to throw it on me and see what you have and put the ball in Daniel's hands. I mean, Carolina did exactly what you have to do. They forced 18 third downs out of the New York Football Giants. They only converted six of them. The problem was Carolina turned the ball over. They got 6 points on just cheap field goals, and that's why they lost. That's why they lost. So I think Green Bay will do it. I think the game's going to get reduced. Brian's going to milk the clock as much as he can milk the clock from the first play on and try to get it in the fourth quarter in a close game. But I think Rodgers and that offense in that last drive against New England started to come alive a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Represents a great teaser opportunity as well from 8, 8.5 down through the 7 and 3 this week for Green Bay. And you think about now as we pivot to the two teams coming off of the London game, with this now having become more of a consistent thing in the NFL, we'll see more international games spread out through the schedule this year. Interesting that neither Minnesota nor New Orleans exercised the option to take a bye week coming out of London. And we made such a big deal out of that in the past and these teams coming back from the overseas trip. Fair to say, Michael, given the technology of travel and ease of commuting from one side of the world to the other, not a thing we should really factor in anymore, or is it a thing to you?
I don't think it is. I think the comfort on the plane. I mean, so if you go to Seattle and you're in New York and you go to Seattle, what's that, a six-hour flight? Six-hour flight. You get off, you're in a different time zone. You know, you go to London, you get off, it's a six-hour flight, seven-hour flight, you're in a different time zone. The problem when you go over to London is it's like going west to east. You lose so much time. So they'll leave today. The Giants and the Packers will leave today after practice. They'll go over there. They'll fly through the night. They'll get in the hotels, and they'll try to catch up on their sleep. I don't think it is a problem at all. I think it's the way we are, and some of these airplanes that they're building are going faster and faster. It's going to continue to grow that way.
I just wonder for the teams coming back now. Vikings, Saints, presumably based on the timing. I was doing the math with our producer, Matt Santos. They were probably back by, 9 o'clock Pacific time, Sunday night anyway?
Oh, but see, the reason they're playing them at 9:30 is because they can get out of Heathrow. Before, when they were playing mm-hmm. them at normal time, Heathrow was closed, so they had to spend the night. So that's why they've changed the schedule, because they can get out of London, even though they're a private. You know, they got those big planes, so you just can't go to some little runway and take off. You got to go to Heathrow, and Heathrow closes at, I think, at 10 o'clock, and the game was over by then. So that's why they're playing the 9:30 kick there, so they can definitely get their plane off the ground.
Yeah, I would say that's a really good point and distinction to make, because for a lot of bettors who might think, oh, all right, these teams played a really tight overtime game, Minnesota, New Orleans, maybe a fade them coming home. It's not the same type of deal it used to be. And those teams were back in bed by Sunday night, just like if it was a long road trip game to a team within the United States. Minnesota laying 7 against Chicago this week. Saints are a 5.5-point home favorite against Seattle coming back home here for week 5. Speaking of week 5, Harry Gagnon, he's got plays. Excited to hear Harry, what he is on for this card in the NFL. We'll get Harry's thoughts as we continue. It's hour 2 right here on the Lombardi Line.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Football season is in full swing, and for everything you need to know before betting this week, subscribe to VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you get full access to everything we do, including our daily picks at a glance recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests, 24/7 video, season prep, including our weekly college and pro football matchup guides covering every game all season long, pro tools like our exclusive betting splits, and pro tips updated every hour with actionable insights to up your betting game. Sign up on our discounted football special and get VSiN Pro access to everything we do from now through the Super Bowl for only $175, or save 50% off the monthly price with an annual subscription, and bet smarter all year long. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for all your options and become part of the Sports Betting Network. Those picks at a glance, they'll include our guest right now, Harry Gagnon, who joins the show each and every Wednesday on the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM. Harry, who's part of the Degenerate Trifecta, the Against All Odds podcast with Cousin Sal. Great to welcome Harry back on the show, former Las Vegas sportsbook supervisor as well at the nearby Red Rock here in town in Las Vegas. Harry, pretty good week from you last week, but the Lions kind of did you in on the parlay. Detroit, that's the one team giving the H-Dog problem so far. I felt bad for you watching how that one played out. What are you going to do, though?
Guys, that was something else. I mean, you put up 45 points. You have a career-changing game out of Hockenson at the tight end position, and you get 4 touchdowns from the quarterback position, and you still lose that game. Shame on the Lions. That was my only loser. That was rough, guys. That was rough to see.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know how you can you when you play the Lions, when you're putting your money on Dan Campbell and his ability to manage a game after the Minnesota game last week, It's buyer beware, Harry. I mean, you know, like, look, you do whatever you want to do. I respect it. Look, their offense is incredible. You know, even without Swift, without Brown, you know, they were incredible. They moved the ball up and down the field. But, you know, they still turned the ball over. You know, Goff throws another pick six, which, you know, but, I mean, look, I just to me, they can't fix their defense. Has gotten worse. They didn't even get near. Geno Smith was pitching Geno Smith, you thought he was Don Larson out there pitching a perfect game.
You're right. I mean, I don't know what Aaron Glenn's thinking defensively here. And you're right. This is insane. Geno Smith, by the way, you know, he's completing 77.3% of his passes this year. Who saw that coming from Seattle, especially after the opening Monday night game against Denver when they couldn't move the ball at all? I mean, this is
in the second half. They moved it in the first half. They moved it in the first half. But Harry, I mean, Geno's the fifth best quarterback in the league in terms of net yards per passing per play. I mean, Shane Waldron's doing a hell of a job with two rookie tackles. The only team they could move the ball on was San Francisco.
Yeah. I mean, Mike, I said it against a lot yesterday. I said, right now, the best stat, by far the best stats quarterback right now out of the NFC West quarterbacks is Geno Smith. You can throw Russell Wilson in there, too. Geno Smith's playing better than all of them.
He's leading the league in completion percentage. You mentioned that number, nearly 80% right now for Geno Smith. The reason for one of the only real Harry loss. Harry, you did a good job, though, with the other picks. You hit that under with Rams and 49ers easily comes home. Giants get the job done against the Bears, and then a push on Buffalo minus the 3 against Baltimore. So we turn the card ahead to week number 5 now. And we were just talking during the break and I asked Michael about this last segment, if he was concerned at all about the Green Bay defense after New England really gashed the Packers after turning to Bailey Zappe at quarterback once Brian Hoyer was injured, the original quarterback in that first quarter here. So New England now comes back home after that tight overtime loss, taking on the Detroit team who did just burn you, Harry. You have action on this game. What's the direction you're leading here?
I do, and you know what? Look, I'm going to lay the point to the Pats. Bailey Zappe, baby. Bailey Zappe. He looked good. He looked confident. Last year at West Kentucky, he was 33 yards short of 6,000. He had 62 passing touchdowns. The Pats played tough last week. They played really tough defensively, I thought, with a pick six against Aaron Rodgers in Lambeau. Really could have won that game last week, but still played inspiringly. I liked what the running game did last week as well. I'm going to lay the 3. I think the Pats pound the ball. Belichick pounds the ball. Detroit can't stop the run. Detroit will get theirs because they have been, like you mentioned, a fantastic team scoring. I think they're averaging about 35 points a game. But I think the Pats are going to get theirs, too. And I have confidence in Zappe. I think they cover the 3 against Detroit, who 2 weeks in a row, Detroit should have wins, and they got losses. Now they got to go on the road. I'm going to take the Pats.
Yeah, I think Belichick will slow the game down. I think he's got to slow the game down. I mean, the last thing he wants to do with a rookie quarterback, in fact, I mean, if Bailey plays, which I probably think he will, is get into a track meet because they can move the football. I mean, they're able to control the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. Goff, when he feels protected, he's good at doing it. But I think that's ultimately – you got to slow this game down. I mean, they average 6.5 yards per play. 6.5 yards per play, and they average 0.52 per play. So, I mean, they're getting points. There's no doubt.
That Detroit-New England line, too, that total, lowest total we've seen for Detroit all season. Harry was talking about just what a tremendous over team the Lions have been so far, averaging that 35 a game. 45.5 to 46 we're seeing in the market there. But, Harry, on the Patriots laying the 3, we talked last week that Commanders-Cowboy line seems so fishy, and we all kind of mutually agreed to stay away from that game. But you are going back into a game that does involve Carson Wentz and the Commanders this week here, Harry.
Yeah, well, I mean, all 3 of us would have been right, too, last week.
We would, covering
the 3. But I did stay away. I laid off it. But I am taking the Titans here at -2.5 against Washington. Washington, just 18 total points in their last 2 games combined, which included against Philadelphia, last-minute touchdown that meant nothing. I think this is a situation, guys, where not a tremendous amount of great offensive talent on both sides here. So how about just have the best player on the field get the ball, let him take control of the game, like Saquon Barkley did last week against the Bears. Let him win the game for you. Let Derrick Henry win the game for the Titans. pound the ball with Henry. He had his best game of the season last week with 150 total yards and a touchdown. We've seen this Washington offense. It's beyond anemic. Can't get anything going rushing the ball. I'm going to take the Titans, pound Derrick Henry. Titans still, no, obviously, still very much in the race in the South. They need to have this one. Give me the Titans. I'm going to lay the 2.5 against Washington.
The only concern I have here is if you look at this Titan, if you look at Washington's defense the last 2 weeks, if the first of the season they couldn't stop the run. Against Philly, they held Philly to 72 yards. Philly threw the ball on them and killed them, right, in the second quarter. Then last week, Dallas couldn't really run the ball on them at all. Dallas struggled to run the ball. Now, Dallas threw for 217, but I think this is going to be one of those games. I'm with you. I see this for me as a no play because I don't trust Washington to move the football. Wentz is averaging like 4.7, 4.8 per completion. And I don't know if Tennessee's going to be able to throw the ball effectively. I think it's going to go down to the last second of this game. To me, this sets up kind of like a Washington good play because one thing about Tennessee, they never run away from you. They scored 24 points in the first half. They didn't score another point. They still beat the Colts.
Yeah, no points. Each of the last two second halves now for Tennessee were able to survive each of those games against the Raiders and the Colts from last week. And I like, Harry, you're looking at all these tightly lined games for this week. We talked about Pats minus the 3, Titans minus the 2.5. How about Bengals-Ravens? Another game lined right around a field goal. Big AFC North showdown Sunday night. Who you got there?
Yeah, you know what, guys? I'm going to lean towards the Bengals. I'm going to take the points here. Cincinnati, 2 wins in a row. Kind of a bad loss for Baltimore being up 20-3 at home and blowing that against Buffalo, as we mentioned. Last year when these two met, Cincinnati blew Baltimore out of the building, scored 41 on them both times. Mixon finally got in the end zone. He had 16 touchdowns last year. Maybe that got him going. And the last two wins for Cincinnati, last two games, 2 wins, Burrow 5 touchdowns, 0 picks, sacked just 3 times compared to 13 over the first two games. O-line playing much better. And I just feel that Baltimore, who's last in passing defense, Burrow's been hot lately. Burrow's going to rip him to shreds here, I think. And he beats Lamar. I think they plus 3 is good. But even money line sprinkle is something definitely that you could do, too.
I think Lou Amoromo does a great job against Lamar Jackson. Did it last year, too. And I think he's been the key to their team, frankly. I think he's the glue that holds the Bengals. His defensive ability to take away the opponent and make adjustments in the second half has been the key to Cincinnati coming back. And Cincinnati's formula is not really complicated. Don't turn the ball over. Make sure we make all our field goals and let the defense create some turnovers.
And we'll see. That number's kind of been back and forth between 3 and 3.5. Maybe if you hold out here, could get a 3.5 on Cincinnati. Market-wide at 3 right now. So Harry taking the Bengals and the points this week. As we get you out of here, Harry, we know you're going back to the well. A little 3-teamer on the money line. What do you got here this week?
3-teamer, money line. It pays plus 156, guys. I'm taking the Vikings. Minus 320 over the Bears. Bears offense continues to be putrid. I'm going to take San Francisco, minus 290 to win against Carolina. San Francisco's defense has allowed just 46 total points after 4 weeks. Carolina can't get things offensively going at all. And I'm going to take the Eagles at minus 225 money line in a battle against the Birds, against the Cards. Weird stat here, weird number here, guys. Arizona, 0-7 in their last 7 home games. 10-1 in their last 11 road games. In Glendale here in Arizona. That means the Eagles win the game. That's your 3-teamer. Eagles minus 225, San Fran minus 290, and the Vikings will go to 4-1 at minus 320.
Boom. We love it, Harry. Thank you, as always, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week, and we'll talk to all of you on the other side. Our final segment coming up on the Lombardi Line next.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets. It's never been easier to join the action on the new BetMGM app, featuring a fresh redesign with improved features and quicker navigation. Planning a trip to Vegas? You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM resorts located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide.
BetMGM Rewards is sports betting's premier loyalty program, including exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager with BetMGM. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to take advantage of BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. As we wrap up the Lombardi Line, our pro tip of the hour that we have for you each and every hour across the network here. I will flash this up on the screen momentarily as we get ready to wrap up the show talking about a couple games that apply to this tip we're going to talk about, and that is focus on teams that are either very good starting teams or good finishing teams or vice versa, teams that are to the extremes in one sense or another. And the pro tip we have, especially something you talk about all the time, Michael, if a team isn't playing a full 60 minutes, teams say like the Titans being outscored 64-7 in second halves of games, or a team like the Cardinals being outscored 31-0 in first quarters or by 50 so far in the first halves of games. Those are teams that you can hone in on and find specific angles to attack. And you look at Arizona, Michael, it's got to be a team that you continue to scratch your head at and wonder, what are they doing out of the gates with Cliff Kingsbury and company there?
Well, they haven't scored a point in the first quarter all year, and they're one of the worst teams in terms of average per attempt yards down the field. They don't throw it down the field. They have no playmakers. They cut Andy Isabella, the guy they drafted from Massachusetts, I think in the second or the third round. I mean, they've got no playmakers. They're just trying. The fact that they've won two games, I mean, the first half of that Carolina game, it's 10-3 at the half. Carolina did nothing offensively, but Arizona did even less. Now they're going to play Philadelphia, which is the best scoring team in the first half of any team. I mean, they get going, you know, and they don't even do it in the first quarter. They do it in the second quarter. I think they've scored 65 points in the second quarter already. So to me, this and Arizona, they don't mind playing from behind. And why is that? Because it becomes a loose play game. They can run around and he can throw it and he'll make a play here and make a play there. But when you keep him in the pocket like Carolina did in the first half of that game, he can't play. He can't play. He can't see it to make throws. But when he can get out of there, he can. And people have the formula for how to play Kyler Murray right now, even though they've gave him all this money. And if he gets out of the pocket, it's all bets are off. He's great. But make him play from behind the center, it's a tough game.
And the updated number now on the anemic results from early on, you mentioned no points for Arizona in the first quarter. Outscored 31-0 there. It's now 66-16, the first half deficits Arizona is facing so far through four games this season. Conversely, for Philadelphia, you mentioned being a great starting team. The 85 points Philadelphia has put up through four second quarters right now, that is on pace to be an NFL record. No team has ever put up that many points per individual quarter in history. I don't know how you quantify where that is coming from, but Philadelphia has clearly found a solution to these early game situations here.
Right, and so Philly averages 23 points a game in the first half. 23 in the first half, right? So what does that tell you? So everybody talks about the West Coast offense, right? And it's smash 7 curl or 20 bingo cross. No, the West Coast offense is there's plays, but it's a philosophy as well. It's we are going to throw the ball to get the lead, and we are going to be able to rush the passer. Like, you have to have an elite pass rusher if you are a West Coast offense team. That's just because we're going to get the lead in the first half. Philly's done that. The next best team is Kansas City and Baltimore. They both average 18 points a game. Tennessee is a really fast starting team. And that allows you to play more effectively. Why is it so important for Tennessee to play fast in the first half? Because if they get behind, then Derrick Henry's not involved in the game. And they can't play if he's not involved in the game. So you've got to be really careful. Philly this week, if they get ahead of Arizona, I'm not saying they won't cover. I think they will, because I think ultimately, but Arizona's comfortable playing from behind because it becomes a loose play game.
Mm-hmm. We've seen the money come into Philadelphia like it has most weeks. Eagles opening -4, up to now 5 or 5.5. The one really surprising stat, I didn't think Arizona would rank this highly against the run from what we've seen so far. But Arizona is third in the NFL defending the run on an EPA per play basis, have really struggled against the pass so far. If you look at Arizona to this point, bottom 11 in the league defending the pass. And as we know, if you're going to defend Philadelphia, we had the conversation earlier, team that runs the ball on a pace to run with Jalen Hurts as a quarterback more than anybody in NFL history, is that one area that would possibly give you some cause for concern just going to blindly back the Eagles on the road here, given how good Arizona actually has been defending the run so far?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, but this is a different kind of run. So all those numbers I don't think are really relevant because, you know, Carolina's quarterback wasn't involved in the run game, right? So that doesn't count. And, you know, when you watched the Raiders, another game they won, Carr's not involved in the run game. So that's the thing. Now, Stafford's not involved in the run game, but they haven't been able to run the ball because of their offensive line. So I think you got to – and Kansas City, their quarterback runs a little bit, but he's not involved in the run game. He moves, but he's not involved in the run game. This is the first game where they're going to have a sixth player as an offensive weapon.
Mm-hmm. It's a great
And that's what makes Philly so dangerous. Because he's going to lead – again, you said it earlier in the show, he's going to carry for over 225 times this year. He's part of the run game. And if you don't do what happened last week was – as we talked about on our show here, is Philadelphia knew that the Jaguars were going to set their run game outside in. So they took away Hurts in the run game. They basically, instead of setting it inside out like most people do and force you to run to the sideline and spill the play outside, they spilled it the reverse way. They wanted, and so Miles Sanders had a great game. He ran the ball inside. And unlike what the Bucs were able to do last year because they had Sue and they had Vita Vey, the Eagles were able to run the ball inside. Jacksonville couldn't hold up as well in there. I don't know if they can hold up inside. Bo Allen and J.J., I don't know if J.J. Watt will play or not, but this Cardinal defense is going to be really challenged because of it's a different run game. I don't know if the stats apply there, Ben.
And Watt listed as questionable, as you mentioned right now, on the defensive end for Arizona. You mentioned, though, the distinction that we talk about the RPO rates, and you can look at Kansas City. Sure, they're number one in run-pass option usage so far this year. Philadelphia is number two. But wouldn't you say, and you've talked about how on the Philadelphia side, that is who they are, running the football with Jalen Hurts and the rest of the attack around him. That is the offense to a T. But with Kansas City, because, if you're saying, well, Arizona, they faced an offense like that in the past that's going to go heavy RPO. Isn't it, though, for Kansas City, it's more a means to keep defenses honest and showing the threat of the run to try to open up space for the pass? Isn't that generally how Kansas City's been using their RPO specifically and why maybe it's a little bit different than the actual attack you're going to get on the Philly side?
I think a lot of times we count an RPO when it's really not an RPO. I think sometimes they count it like there's no way they want Mahomes to run the ball. I think it's really play action. I think it's really play action. So a true RPO is he should do exactly what Hurts does, is he running with the football, right? You know, and so I think oftentimes we tend to count it. I think they do it really to pull the linebacker in. It's a play action pass. I think he's always throwing it. I don't think he really is either going to give it to the back or he's going to, but he's never running with it. So it's really, to me, it's a different way of saying it's a play action. You call it RPO. It's RPO for Philly, right? Run pass option, but the quarterback's part of the run in Philly. The quarterback's not part of the run. See, you can play the run in the RPO, but when you have to play the quarterback run too, you got to designate somebody to take Hurts out of the game. So now you got three people involved in defensively. In a true RPO with the Kansas City's run, you only got two people involved.
Jalen Hurts, the Philadelphia quarterback, he's rushed over 50 times. And Patrick Mahomes, 13 carries so far, even though, as you point out, technically the RPO rate is higher for Kansas City. Doesn't that illustrate your point?
It's a different RPO. It's a play-action pass game. And that's where because whoever's grading this for whatever service you're using to determine this RPO, they see the ball going to the belly of the back and the quarterback looking at the will linebacker, and they're saying, okay, that's RPO. Well, yeah, it is, but it's no different than if he was under center and he faked a handoff and he dropped back and threw it.
Yeah,
right.
It's a good, and I'm glad we brought this up because it's a good distinction to make when getting into the deep dive handicaps of all these spots. Chiefs, by the way, Monday night home against the Raiders. That'll be a big divisional showdown for Kansas City, laying 7.
If you you play Kansas City, Ben, when you play Kansas City, you got to set the edge, right? And your will linebacker isn't worried about Mahomes running with it. Now he will at times on a key down, but you're really worried about that backside curl. But you better set the front side edge.
Can Max Crosby and Chandler Jones, can they do that for the Raiders, even though Crosby's more of a guy trying to get up the middle at times? I don't know. We'll see. We saw the Chiefs completely blow out the Raiders last year in back-to-back games. A lot of time till that game to break all that down. Michael, I feel like we covered a lot of ground today, which is good.
We did.
A lot of spirited
discussion.
We even
got the Hall of Fame in there.
We even got the Hall of Fame in there. Yeah, it's great to hear about the new book that will be coming out on your end there in August of next year. So thanks, as always, to Michael. Patrick back on the show tomorrow. And up next, it is VSiN Big Bets with Dave Ross and Amal Shaw right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.